great companies were never built by conservative leaders. Great companies were built by risk takers. Those that go for it and they roll it, and that's how they do it. Yes, there's a lot more failures than there are successes, but the good ones, and I've done it six times in my life, built six big businesses, do it on the basis of taking risk and having vision.
This is The Dime. Dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields, and with me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Boris Jordan, founder and chairman of Curaleaf. Boris, thanks for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Great. Happy to be here, guys.
Excited to dive in. Kellen, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Really excited to talk to Boris. Really excited to dive into Curaleaf. I mean, probably one of the first and only real international cannabis companies out there. How are you, Brian?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun topic today. Talk not only about the United States, but about Europe, which seems to be really growing in interest and in being in the news. And Boris, we got a little East Coast, West Coast battle, and I think it's really important just to put you on the map. I know Curaleaf has a specific home state, and I was curious if you could share with us what that home state is.
Well, this company was launched in New York, and up until very recently, our headquarters have been in New York. I do have to say that for price reasons and being economical, we just moved our headquarters up to our offices up to Stamford, Connecticut, but we're still consider ourselves a New York company.
Let the record reflect, Kellen.
Yeah, that's funny. I saw that and I was looking for a West Coast tie at all. And I was like, New York University. I was like, I got nothing.
No. I was born and raised in New York, and yeah. I did go to NYU. I sit on the board of NYU, but I myself live in Florida, but our company's headquartered up in New York and now offices in Connecticut.
I love it. So Boris, for our listeners, they likely have a very strong understanding about you and kind of Curaleaf, but I've heard you mention recently that Curaleaf has the strongest growth catalyst of almost all the companies out in the industry. And I'd like you to kind of dive and elaborate specifically on why you think that is for those who are unfamiliar on some of these specifics.
So let me go first from a 30,000 altitude sort of level and talk about it from there, from 30,000 feet. So in the United States, the following catalysts are coming up for not only Curaleaf, but for a lot of the other MSOs. And that is that, as you know, New York just launched adult use in December. We're obviously gotten off to a fantastic start. We can go into that. And Curaleaf has always been a dominant player in New York. That's our home market. We've had a 50% wholesale share, very strong retail share as well. And that's that in the medical business now, and that's going to be moving over to adult use as we get in here in the first quarter. Obviously, Ohio passed, as you know, adult use. That's going to happen at the end of this year, we expect. Curaleaf has one of the larger grows there. We have two stores. We're about to open up three that we're going to get under the AU. And we're in negotiations to acquire another three. So we're going to have the full eight stores. As the program gets launched, hopefully, we'll be fully open. So that's Ohio. The next catalyst, obviously, is Florida. You know, we got 2 weeks until we go on the ballot officially. We all know that the Supreme Court has to opine on it, or if they don't, as of April 1st, you automatically go to the ballot, which is what I expect that will happen. I don't think the Supreme Court's going to rule on this issue. I think they're just going to leave it alone, and then officially we go on the ballot. We're pretty confident that ballot will pass. It is a higher threshold than other states have been, 60%. We have to get to get it approved, but we're very comfortable. The industry is very united on this issue. We're all going to be working together. We're all putting up money to get this thing across the line. We're very, very comfortable that we'll get it there, although we're not going to take anything for granted. That obviously is a major catalyst, and there Curaleaf is currently building out a very substantial addition to our already substantial indoor grows so that we have as much capacity as the largest player in the market, Curaleaf. And we're also adding another 25 stores to our infrastructure. We'll have all of that operationally, fully operational by the time the program launches, which we expect to be July 1st of 2025. So we are going to be battling in Florida for that number one poll position. That's where we want to be. And that's what we're going to be battling for. We're not there yet, but we're putting in all the infrastructure as we speak to make sure that we are there for when that happens. So that's Florida, obviously very big market. Curaleaf is expecting a triple. We're being a little bit more conservative at the moment and saying we think it's a double with some upside for tourism. 135 million tourists last year, 25 million population. You know, we're very comfortable with that market. We think it's going to be a really big catalyst for us, probably after Germany and Europe probably the second largest catalyst for Curaleaf. Then if we stay in the U.S., we fully expect that later this year or first thing next year, we'll probably get Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is surrounded by all adult use markets. It looks as though the governor there, as well as the legislator, is having serious conversations on the matter. There is some resistance still, but we're pretty comfortable that we think we can get this done. That's obviously a very large market. Curaleaf has very strong positioning in Pennsylvania. We have our full allotment of 18 stores. We have two large grows there fully ready for adult use. So we're fully built out there. We're very comfortable with that market. So look, you've got between New York, 20 plus million people, Ohio, 10 million plus people, Florida, 20 million plus people, Pennsylvania, 9 million people. You've got a huge TAM coming onto the market over the next 2 years. So we're looking at, we think this market will return for those players operating, the larger players operating in those markets. We think this market will return to double-digit type growth numbers again when we get into 25, 26, and 27. And then for Curaleaf, you've got Europe. In Europe, we've got UK, where we have 50% share, just under 50% share, and growing at more than 50% annualized. We have Germany, which you all know has just been, decision has been made to not only decriminalize, but to reschedule completely off the narcotics list cannabis, which is a major move by a major G7 country, the second one after Canada to do it. And we should have the Bundesrat vote on the 27th. And we're hopeful that that program will get launched either April 1st or very soon thereafter, depending on some administrative issues. So, and we're fully ready in that market through our 420 subsidiary, our 420 brand, and a 23% share in that market. We also just opened up a new market in the fourth quarter of last year in Poland. That's a very 60 million person market, very strong growth prospects right now. We've just bought a Polish wholesaler. So we are now bringing our brands into that market, not only selling into that market, but now bringing our brands into that market. And that's a very important decision for us. And today, made the first sale into the Czech Republic and are getting into that market as well. That market was moving on the back of Germany. So we're very excited. And we've got more news coming over the next week or so in our expansion plans in Europe. We're really built out in Europe. We have full operations for growing, manufacturing, and distribution out of Portugal. We have a EU GMP certified facility there, which is takes a long time to get. We expect to get that full certification on April 15th of this year. And that's a process that sometimes takes up to 2 to 3 years. So we invested in that market, as into Europe 3 years ago. We've been getting all of our certifications, all of our products registered, all that kind of work. So it's a much more difficult market than the U.S. to get into. The barriers of entry are very high. So we feel we have a bit of a head start on everybody, and we're continuing to build our brands there. So that's an overview of the growth catalyst. And if you look at Europe, you're talking about Germany, 84 million people to add to the list I gave you in the U.S., right? Czech Republic, Poland, that's another 60 million. UK, 60 plus million people. We're talking about very, very large markets that are coming on stream in Europe with an overall TAM of over 700 million, twice the size of the United States, what many people don't realize. And we think the way Germany goes, France, Italy, Spain, the rest of those countries will go as well. So we're very, very excited about those markets. And we feel that that's what gives us catalysts that nobody else has.
So Curaleaf has always been a first mover, right? I remember 7 years ago, they went out and acquired Select, right? Huge waves throughout the industry, kind of brought a lot of legitimacy, honestly, to the industry, right? Showed that there was large acquisitions possible. And so in the early days, you guys must have learned a ton from fast growth in the domestic US market. What kind of lessons have you guys learned that you're employing as you expand throughout Europe from the fast growth in the US to now, as Europe is probably 10 years behind the US market?
So the big thing we're doing in Europe, the difference in Europe than the United States is that in Europe, we're focusing only at the moment on those markets that have scale potential. We're not going into small countries. Now, you might argue that I just said Czech Republic. Well, the Czech Republic, the reason that that market is because in Europe, unlike the United States, we're able to sell, grow and manufacture, and then sell through the whole of the continent without having to build facilities in every country. So that allows us actually to also go into certain markets. Now, we're unlikely to build domestic distribution in Czech, but we're going to sell into those distributors into Czech. So we're not going to probably build domestic distribution, but we will in Poland because those markets, anything over 50 million people, we want to be there in Europe. So in the US, we kind of, because it was a new industry, we didn't know how it was going to develop. We literally spread the flag very wide, very fast. And we definitely made mistakes. We went to markets we shouldn't have been in. And so what we did was, in 23, we rationalized Curaleaf quite dramatically. We're now done with that. We have either closed markets or sold markets and sold assets in those markets where we don't want to be. We're fully complete. We've written off those bad investments that were made. We're done with those. So we go into 24 with a completely clean balance sheet from a perspective of legacy assets. And we're very comfortable with the position we have in the United States right now. We're in the 17 best markets that we want to be in. We were in 23. So we closed quite a substantial amount of smaller businesses that we had. And we're focusing on those places where we can go deep, we can go wide, and where we feel that it's justifiable for Curaleaf to be in because you have high population markets.
Just to make sure that I understand correctly, and for the listeners that maybe be confused, in Europe, like you were saying, that there's certain countries that allow for you to distribute products to other countries.
That's all Europe.
Got it. So it's
Europe,
not
because it's legal in Europe, unlike the United States, right? It's medically legal. You can actually move products. So we grow and manufacture in Portugal, and we move. We sell to England. We move to Germany. We move it to Czech. We go to Poland. You know, hopefully soon we're negotiating with Ukrainians. We're going everywhere where there are markets. But what we're doing is in places like the UK, Germany, and Poland, because they are over 50 million people, what we're doing there is we're actually building domestic distribution as well, because we want to move our brands in those markets. In the other markets that are smaller, we're just going to sell into local wholesalers, and then they'll distribute the products.
Got it. Thanks for clarifying that, because I think that's a very unique difference that maybe is not so clear from the initial onset, that they operate differently. And because of that, strategically, you're positioning your assets uniquely. So
Europe is much more what the US should be.
Sure.
Right? It is a classic consumer products market where you can manufacture and grow in one place. You can get economies of scale and then distribute all over the continent. You don't have to build these crazy facilities in every single state. And that's where some of the mistakes were made by Curaleaf early on. And that we didn't realize some of these markets were too small to justify the size of the investment we were putting in there. And they weren't going to yield enough return to us. And so we had to backtrack on those and focus on the big ones.
Sure. And that makes sense, given that the states all operate at different speeds. And given the time frame, it's very difficult to understand the implications behind certain decisions without knowing, right, how the whole map will play out. And given those lessons learned, you can apply those to Europe. So just from an understanding macro standpoint, size wise, is there markets that you can kind of relate it to? So it makes more sense. Like, do you see Germany being Florida comparative, just to give people like a 1-to-1 rough understanding of like the huge implications of the size of some of these markets?
Well, I mean, Germany is, you know, an absolutely enormous, I mean, it's 84 million people, right? I mean, it is take, you know, California and it's basically two plus times California, right? So California, they say, is around 40 million. This is 84 million people, right? Very popular product, cannabis in Germany, very widely used. We're very, very comfortable. Now, I want to stress, because there's a lot of misunderstanding out there, it is a medical market. Yes, there's something called Pillar 2 in the law, which is going to be these social clubs. We're not focused on that because that we don't really think that's an interesting market at the moment. What we're focusing on is the widespread medical market. Now, that market, what's going to make it very large, vice versa what it is today, is because by taking cannabis off the narcotics list, because in Germany, they have a rule. A doctor can only prescribe a certain amount of narcotic to every patient. So they have a cap on how many narcotics they can prescribe per doctor, which, by the way, we should have in our country to get rid of the opiate crisis, right? But anyway, we're talking about Germany now. But they have a limit on how many narcotics you can prescribe. So cannabis was always last on the list, right? Because they needed to prescribe others. So that held the program back. By removing cannabis from the narcotics list, you can prescribe this and doctors don't have any limitation on what they can do. And there's such demand for the product. There were 600,000 patients that never went into the program because they were rejected by their doctors. That's an official number. So that's 600,000 that day one are going to come back into the program, right? I mean, that's 5 times growth from where we are today in Germany already. So think about it. You know, Curaleaf last year did call it around 25 million in Germany, right? So we're now going to be, you know, that's over 12 months, that could be a 5x growth rate on that number, you know, just based on our market share. So we're very excited about it. And then think about if you compare it to Florida, you know, that's a $6 billion market, right? If not more. It's very exciting. Now, that won't happen day one, right? All these things take time to get going. So I don't want people to think like, you know, they're going to switch the switch and, you know, it's going to go up 5x. It takes a while to get your products in the market, you know, but we have our supply chain already. What I promised our investors when I made that European investment, I said, I will be ready as these markets come online. And that's what we did. And that's why many people don't understand why I carry a bit more leverage than other companies, why maybe my cash is a little bit lower than other companies, because I'm investing all the time. I'm building, I'm investing. I don't understand this whole fanaticism on cash. Okay. As long as I can pay my obligations, why do I want to carry a lot of cash? I get paid no interest and no return on my balance sheet in an industry that should be growing at, you know, 25% annualized. I want to be investing into the future. That's what I do. That's the difference between Curaleaf and a lot of the other companies. I'm not knocking the other guys. They're building a moat around themselves, right? Me, I'm about building. I'm about growth. I don't believe the genie's going back in the bottle. I don't think there's any risk to this. I'm full speed ahead.
So one of the biggest differences between the German, I guess, other European markets as well, I think the UK has a similar program, is you get compensated by your insurance company for the medicine that you're being prescribed by your doctor. How is that infrastructure set up? Like, talk us through, why is that different in Europe? Has it always been that way? Like, it's not that way in the US for private insurances.
Well, you know, because we're federally legal in the United States, and because we're not classified an official medicine in the United States, right? No insurance company is ever going to pay for it. So in Germany, first of all, you have, you know, Europe has a socialized system of medicine, and then they have private insurance as well. So there's green and red lights that allow you to either get refunded for your cannabis or not. So the current, we don't have the final copy of the law, but the current draft of the law in Germany will allow, at the moment, about 50% of the patients, out of the 300,000 patients you have in Germany, 50% do get insurance refunds, 50% don't. It depends on where you opt in, where you don't. Under the new program, it looks as though, at the moment, let's get the final law, right? The Bundesstaat is still discussing all this, what it's going to look like. So, you know, I don't want to predict it now, but what we're seeing is that it's going to be close to 100% refund from both private and public insurance for patients. That obviously is going to give a massive kickstart to the program, right? I mean, let's be honest. Somebody's paying at least part of your cost. It's going to give you a little bit of a little bit of a boost in the market. We have never seen anything like that in the United States, I can tell you that much.
When you were laying these plans 3 years ago for Europe, there was assumptions that your team made, right? There's bets that you have to make, forecasting what you assume the future is. And now, kind of looking back on it, do you think that there was a lot of it you got right? And what did you think you got wrong that you assumed that they would have done differently? And kind of just take us through the mindset from 3 years ago and then where we are today.
You know, obviously, we all think that reform is going to happen fast. Certainly, when I got involved in this industry, I didn't think we were still going to be discussing, you know, rescheduling in the U.S. or
safe banking, all those things.
I'm like, how many times have we passed safe banking in the House? I mean, it's like, you know, this is just a joke, right? So, you know, we all think reform is going to happen faster. The one thing I will tell you, this is not only a U.S. phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon. Global governments, particularly, and I would say the G7, Western Europe, have really slowed down in their ability to reform these countries, to bring in change. There's roadblocks everywhere, bottlenecks politically. And it's not only in the United States. It's everywhere across Western Europe. I am very worried about the Western world because, you know, I have experience in places like Russia and Eastern Europe and Africa and Asia. I've invested all over the world. And I can tell you that that part of the world, that, you know, the Emirates, Saudi, the reforms in these countries are happening at lightning speed compared to the United States. They remind me of where we were back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and even 90s before we got into the current environment, where there was bipartisanship. Republicans and Democrats worked together. You know, I worked on the Hill back in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was president. We used to always get together with the other side. I was working for a Republican congressman on the Ways and Means Committee. You know, everybody worked together because the goal was to better the country. And what's happened now is you've got roadblock. It's all about ideology and partisanship. It's not about bettering the country or making life better for the people. As a matter of fact, I think it's in many ways, it's making it worse. And it's not only the United States, we're seeing that across the Western world. The Western world has, in my opinion, reached a critical stage. And that's why we're seeing a lot more activity like this in other countries around the world, and they're moving faster. So these things get held up. And that's, I would say, the biggest issue is the slow crawl of reform. Come on, everybody knows cannabis has been used for thousands of years. They found cannabis in Egyptian tombs, okay? Nobody dies from this stuff, okay? You die from alcohol poisoning. You die from cigarettes. You die from opiates. You die from fentanyl. Cannabis is actually a healthy plant if used properly. And it's freaking Schedule One. It's insane, right? And you know the problem there is, it's pharma lobbying. And I don't mind saying it. I don't have any problem saying it. They are scared to death of cannabis being legalized because their pain medications, anxiety medications, all these things, if they allow us to do real R&D, if they allow us to do real work with the plant, with the different cannabinoids, they know they're in trouble. And so they're doing everything to stop us because they don't work with biologicals. They only work with synthetics. We're working with clean, organic, biological products. And we can do it cheaper than they can do it in synthetics. And that's the way. If you look at every synthetic company for cannabis, they've all gone bankrupt. Why? They could not do it at a commercial scale economically to compete with us that are doing it using natural plant-based products. And that's the difference. And so Europe is a little bit more progressive than the US on homeopathic medicine. And that's why I think they're moving a little bit faster with the legalization process than we are, because their regulators actually encourage plant-based medicines and homeopathic medicines over synthetic medicines. And so I would say that that's some of the issues there.
Sure. And then taking it off the narcotics list is obviously a big game changer because it allows doctors to kind of move it up the introduction list for these patients, that and especially in comparison to the opioids, as we've seen from a medical difference, it's a game changer for patients. And hopefully doctors continue to that. And the telemedicine, too, also is a big game changer, right, for the industry. And I'd like you to explain kind of how that works so that people are unfamiliar with, you know, the benefits of how quickly that can allow a patient to get access.
Yeah. So telemedicine is, you can, I mean, US has telemedicine in different states for cannabis, right? You have Florida. I actually had my Florida appointment yesterday on telemedicine. Usually I meet with my doctor in Florida, but I was traveling for a good cause, my son's bachelor party. So
I couldn't do it.
Meeting and my card was expiring. So I got on the telemedicine platform. We had about a 15-minute conversation. And he's a very responsible doctor. He just doesn't sign. He likes to talk to the patients, what they're using it for. I actually use cannabis for sleep deprivation because I travel so much, and for arthritis, inflammation, pain. Those are the two things I use it for. I'm not a smoker. I use rubs and edibles.
You have a favorite product?
So there's three products. The Curaleaf X gummy is my absolute, I can't live without it because it puts me down for 8 hours and I sleep like a baby and I don't wake up every 10 minutes screaming. So I sleep like a grown baby. So I love our Florida Diamond vape. That is the best vape I've ever tried in my life anywhere. And I'm not saying, listen, before Curaleaf had it, I've tried it at other companies. This Diamond vape, it never hurts your lungs. You don't feel it at all coming in. It tastes great. It's a really good feeling and it gives you a really good entourage effect, which I really, really like. It's one of our best products. We only have it now in two states because it's made through our proprietary technology called ACE, which I talked about years ago. It's actually now operational. We have it in Massachusetts and Florida. So we make those two products, but we are moving that technology to other markets as well. So it's a really, really cool product. So I use that. And then obviously for my arthritis, I use every single day the Curaleaf rub. And I'm going to tell you something. We are actually working with Imperial College in UK to actually go for a medical certification on this rub, as well as a tincture. We're doing trials as we speak on this medicine, and the results are incredible. It could be, after Epidiolex, hopefully one of the first medicines to actually get approved, but with THC, uses THC, CBG, CBN. Anyway, it's got a whole bunch of components in it. And we have doctors working in the UK along with Curaleaf and our medical business there, Curaleaf Clinics, to work on trying to get trials done and certification on this pain and inflammation medicine, which is really amazing. I tell you, I used to have to drop 3 Advils before I play golf because I have pretty bad arthritis. I now rub it into my hands. 10 minutes later, I'm out there swinging. It's really an incredible product, purely for pain. So those are my 3 favorite products.
So one of the things that I'm curious to know about is that since your company is going to have exposure to like a global audience to build the global brands, which a lot of these companies are focused on, are you open having conversations to MSOs who are saying, hey, Boris, would you be open to white labeling our products out there? Is that something you've considered, had conversations? Can you share anything about that?
So listen, my goal at Curaleaf is to truly build global brands. So I want to build my global brands. And I'm kind of stingy that way. And so if I got to sell somebody else's brand through my facilities, that means I'm not doing my job. I am out there to promote and build Curaleaf, Select, Grassroots, 420, Jams. Like, these are my brands. I'm out there to build them. I want to be the Coca-Cola of the cannabis industry. I want to have my products on every single shelf in the country and in the world as much as I can. That's my goal.
So in Europe, because it's medical now, how do you balance deploying all of these brands that have been successful in the States? Is it like kind of pick or choose? Is there a strategy to that in terms of actually deploying some of these brands to the medical markets?
There's definitely a strategy because, as I said, Europe is medical. And the European regulations, guys, is cannabis is regulated like a pharmaceutical drug in Europe. Okay. So it's very, very, it's much harder. Why did we do this investment 3 years ago? Because we knew it would take 3 years to get the certifications, approvals. We have to certify, get this, okay? I'm sure you guys both use cannabis. Every strain has to be approved by the regulators in UK, Germany, Poland, in every market. It takes over, depending on the country, over a year, at a minimum a year, and in some countries, over a year per strain. You know how much work that is? That's incredible. We have to have all EU GMP certified facilities. These facilities are at a much higher standard than anything we have in the US, right? There, everybody has to be in full white clothing, completely covered, gloves, no bacteria allowed in there. I mean, it's incredible what these facilities are like, right? And it takes a long time to get the certification. Listen, I bought this facility from one of the South American companies that was going bust in their EU GMP certified facility in Portugal about, what, a year and a half ago. And I'm only getting the certification April 15th. And they were already certified. So you have to, because of change of ownership, you got to go through the process. So these things take a long time to do. So that's what I'm really comfortable with in terms of my moat, right? Because anyone that tries to come in there, it's going to take them a long, long time. And I'm not talking about some of my Canadian competitors who, some are there, but mostly part, all they do is package flower in Canada and send it over, right? I'm on the ground building my brands, making sure they're displayed properly on the shelves, working together with all the pharmacies. I mean, we got 10,000 pharmacies in Germany that as of April 1st are going to start distributing product, right? I want to make sure we're on the ground talking to all of them. I got representatives making sure our products are properly displayed. We're educating pharmacists on our products, how they work, how they do. That's how you build brand. That's how you build brand loyalty. You got to be on the ground to do it. So it's very different. A lot of companies are saying, we're in Europe. Well, they're not. They're not spending the time and the money that we are in order to make sure those brands stay there and stay there for a long time.
Are there any other countries in Europe that you've got your eye on that you're thinking to yourself, if this one continues to expand, we likely will be infrastructure in here? Something that we should just look out for in understanding how the landscape plays out?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we are looking at definitely, we're doing a met, we're part of a group that was selected by France to do a test on medical cannabis there. France is a huge market. As a matter of fact, many people don't know it's the largest cannabis market in Europe. It's bigger than all the other ones. France, it's very high penetration of use in France of cannabis. Frankly, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know that. I didn't think that, right? I always thought the French drink red wine. They're not into cannabis. I didn't think, but it is actually the largest market in Europe today. Germany, and even though it has a less population in Germany, it is a very, very prolific market for cannabis. Spain, obviously, we have a partnership with Spain in Alicante University. We have a processing facility there that is EU GMP. That's the one we're using now while our large-scale facility in Portugal is getting certified for April 15th. We're also going to continue to use it as a research facility with the Spaniards. We're getting basically free doctor and PhD students that are working with us on a lot of the R&D that we're doing there. We're getting the same thing in the UK. So for me, Spain, France, Italy, we actually have a partnership there with the military of all people. We actually import product to, because the distributor for medical cannabis in Italy is the military. So it's a very small market, but we're there just because we want to build those relationships. As it legalizes, we have the relationships. We we can get in the market. So listen, all the markets, obviously, we're going to build domestic operations in those countries that have, call it 40 plus million people, 50, close to 40 to 50 million people. The other countries, we will just export product into from our facilities in Portugal. We are looking a little bit at Asia. That's just a little hint. Can't say more.
So besides population and, of course, regulation, right? What are some of the other factors that your guys' team looks at when evaluating new markets? Is it like GDP? Kind of like, how do you guys...
What we really look at, to be honest, number one is usage, right? Because there are cultures out there that just don't use cannabis. There's not a lot of them, but there are. Like China. We're unlikely to be in China anytime soon, right? They don't like it. They're the largest hemp grower in the world, but they use that to make military uniforms and textiles, not to smoke. So, you know, those are kind of countries where I'd love to be in China, but I don't think we're going to be there anytime soon. Russia, right? You know, Putin doesn't even have GMO in his food. He doesn't drink. You know, he hates drugs. While he's president, unlikely that we're going to go into Russia or something like that, right? And there's a war. So that doesn't help either. So, you know, we're looking at markets where cannabis use historically has been strong, because you got to start with a base. What happens is you start with a certain base of users, and then you expand that base through marketing, through work, through education, stuff like that. But that's a much slower build. You know, you want to get to profitability and cash flow pretty quickly, because capital is very expensive in this industry right now, given the restrictions. And so we need to make sure there's a base that uses cannabis. So when we get in, we know we can get within a year to 2 years, we can get to a strong cash flow position. And then we start to, you know, we use the profitability from that to start building and educating and spreading. So you want to be in countries that have cannabis use. That's number one. Two, obviously, is the size of the population. Three, obviously, is, you're right, it's really, it's not GDP, it's PPP, it's purchasing power. So people are making $100 a month, you're not going to really make any money in the cannabis business in that country. So you want to go to countries that have a reasonable level of purchasing power in the population, so you know they can afford our products and that we can earn a return on it. So those are the main things that we're looking at.
I appreciate you breaking that down. And what I'm most fascinated by is, given the complexities of Europe and all the different countries you just expanded on there, and then as well as the domestic markets we have in the United States, I know one of the big focuses for you recently is educating institutional investors, and you've called it an educational process. What does that actually mean? Is that breaking down on the strategy of Curaleaf, or is that talking more about the macro landscape of how cannabis operates and what the opportunity holds next 2 to 5 years?
I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was in New York before I flew out, and I had a meeting. It was the second meeting with one of the largest fund managers in the world, you know, a trillion plus fund manager. And it was an education process. So we got, first we had a Zoom a month ago with their tobacco and alcohol analysts. And they listened to what we had to say about the industry, about everything. And then they called us back and said, hey, can you come into our New York office? And we want to have a much wider group listen to you, right? Because they've got offices all around the world. And we had a much bigger group. And we spent an hour and a half educating them on the industry and obviously on Curaleaf. But these investors, it's early stage, right? They haven't been covering the sector. You know, people like BlackRock and Fidelity were in the sector very early on, but were forced out of it. So they also need a new education, because it's been good 4 years since they've been in the sector. Most of the analysts have dropped out or stopped covering because there was nothing to invest in. The reason I can get in there now, though, is not only because of the, you know, potential rescheduling and safe banking and all that stuff, but because Curaleaf did the work to uplist to the TSX and to get ourselves custodied by Bank of New York, Pershing, by State Street, by Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs. You know, we did our work. And so now I can walk in and say, you can actually own us now, right? They couldn't own us, you know, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. But in December, you know, it took us a year and a half to go where we got to. But now we can be owned. Now the decision is whether their compliance says this is okay from a federal, you know, can they still invest in it? And secondly, about educating on the sector. So this particular fund manager said, we can invest in the sector. We don't have a problem. Our compliance is good. Now we need to learn about the sector. That's a win, right? Because they can buy us. Internal compliance says they can actually own the sector. And now we just got to make sure they think the sector is exciting. And that's what we're doing. We're educating everyone on that basis. And listen, Curaleaf's been doing this from the very beginning when we started, right? We were the first to attract BlackRock as an investor in our IPO, or Fidelity, right? We've been doing this from the very, very beginning. That's what I like to do. But, you know, we lost them all because of, you know, Jeff Sessions and the rescindment of the Cole memo. And then FinCEN couldn't give them guidance on whether they can own this stuff. So they all got out. So now we have to start all over again. You know, I've been doing this for 30 years. We'll start all over again. I was educating people on markets like Russia and Nigeria. Believe me, cannabis is an easier story than Russia and Nigeria. I can tell you that.
And I've heard you allude to the getting the plumbing in place, but I think it's a beautiful illustration to understanding conceptually like what that means and how that applies for these investors. And then kind of expanding on that, I'm just fascinated by the concept of they saying like here in the United States, they've got these medical markets and we've got these recreational markets. We think there's big upside in Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And then in Germany, we've got exposure to these different areas, but it's medical only and we've got infrastructure to allow us. Is that kind of like the combination to allow them to understand the complexity of your strategic arrangement for exposure in all these different areas?
Yeah. And some of these people are very, very smart. Like, you know, this is the nice thing, too, is, you know, I love retail. Retail has kept us alive for 4 years now, since we've been 5 years since we've been public. So thank you, retail. Nothing against. But, you know, it is a difficult market to educate. They look at what's happening today. They don't really invest. They're traders, right? You know, Bitcoin's hot, so they're selling cannabis, buying Bitcoin. Bitcoin's down, they're selling Bitcoin, buying something else, right? It's very difficult to deal with. I'm happy to talk to investors that really understand. We had conversations yesterday like, you know, how is Ozempic and Wegovy and these drugs affecting cannabis demand, right? We've seen a huge fall off in alcohol demand and food demand because they're curtailing, right? There are buildings in New York that are asking people to cover their needles because garbage men are getting poked with these Ozempic needles. I mean, the proliferation of these drugs for weight, you know, is enormous right now. It's a $50 billion market. And right now, it's going to grow, I think. And that's the kind of conversations we're having. We actually said we're the antidote to that, right? I told the fund manager, I don't think I ever used cannabis. I'm like, we got a slang word in our culture called munchies. So I said, you know, we're the opposite end of this drug, right? We make people eat. So she was very amused by that. So we're having very good conversations with these investors. They're doing very thorough, deep dive due diligence on the sector, on the industry, on the consumer. You know, we were talking to them yesterday about consumer metrics. You know, we don't talk to retail investors about that. So it's exciting. I'm really excited. I think we're at the beginning of a new wave of much larger scale investment into the sector.
Yeah, I think that's very fascinating. And that's why I wanted to elaborate on that, because I've heard you talk about the educational process. And I think it's very important to understand kind of the nuanced differences of these markets and then allow for us to understand specifically what you're sharing and then what they're looking for so that people can kind of get a better perspective of what will be, let's call it a USP going forward.
That's it.
So I have to ask about New York. I know that is the Curaleaf's home state and a big wholesaler for you. So I guess starting from the top, on a scale of 1 to 100, with 100 being perfect, today, how confident are you, let's say, in New York's cannabis market and the direction it's heading?
I'm super excited about it. I spent the last week and a half personally visiting accounts in New York and wholesaling and selling the Curaleaf brand and the Curaleaf products. And I like doing that. That's what I really like doing. I hate managing a big corporation. I'd much rather be out in the field, you know, peddling our product. And so I was out meeting with a lot of these social equity license holders, you know, getting them over a lot of the stigma around big cannabis, explaining to who we are, explaining to them that we were them 8 years ago. I started Curaleaf with $450,000 in a small art studio in the town of Seacliff with one store and a license. And we built it to what it is today. And we didn't have anything that they don't have. As a matter of fact, we had a lot less than they have because it was much more uncertain. You know, you could get arrested and thrown in jail for what we were doing at the time. Nobody knew what was going to happen. When I built my first grow, I walked into it. I almost ran and hid in my car because I was like, holy shit, this room's full of cannabis here. I'm going to go to jail. And I mean, that's what it was like, right? And so I was out there telling them, guys, we are just a few years ahead of where you guys are. It's a huge industry. There's a place for everyone. We want to work together with you guys. We want to actually help you, because if you do well in New York, that means we do well, because we're going to be selling our products to you. So that's our goal. I was out there. I'm super excited about the New York market. Yes, there's an illicit market, but let's stop being babies and crying. The way to beat the illicit market is make better products and sell those products and win market share that way and make safe products. That's the most important thing, right? As long as you're making safe products, people will dump the illicit market and come here, because They know they're buying products that are tested and they got to be good, right? And so, you know, there's this concept that the illicit market has the best weed. That's garbage. That is a myth. It really is garbage. Now, listen, we all have bad harvests. We all have, like, in the beginning when you're getting going, it sometimes takes a new facility a while to start producing good cannabis. It just does. That's just the way the thing goes, right? But the fact is that we're growing really, really, really good cannabis right now. And Curaleaf has really upped its game. We bought a really cool genetics company out in California a few years back, Dark Heart. We just changed most of the genetics around the world at Curaleaf, upgraded those genetics, and things are really looking at the upside. So I'm really excited about New York. I'm excited about getting our brands out there. Listen, this is the largest adult use launch since California. It's exciting. There's nothing else to say about it.
Why do you think there is such a stigma against big cannabis in New York? Like, I haven't seen that stigma as prevalent in other states as it is in New York.
Because the government of New York created that stigma. They were out slamming us, attacking us, you know, telling everybody that we're bad. And that's just bullshit, to be honest. And we've called them out on it. We took them to court over it and we settled with them. And now we're moving forward. And I hope that they've learned their lesson from this. We don't want to conflict with the regulator. We want to work with the regulator like we do in all states. And the problem is both New Jersey and New York had hostile regulators. And I think that's the main problem. And once we got out into the field and we started to talk to the license holders, sure, the first 10 minutes are always tough in these conversations. I'm not going to lie. Because they've been brainwashed. It's like, you know, my family ran from the Soviet Union because of communism, right? And we came to the United States and, you know, built a great life here. And we did because, you know, the brainwashing and the control. And that's exactly what these governments are doing. They're brainwashing people and they're trying to divide us and say that we're different from the social equity. How am I different? I'm a first generation American off the fucking boat, right? I mean, I was born here. My parents literally off the boat. Sorry for my French. Tracy's going to go nuts on me right now. but literally, that's who we are, right? I'm no different than anybody else that started a business in the United States, right? And, you know, I didn't have billions of dollars. I didn't have huge investors. We started, we built it brick by brick. We built it up and it's worked out. And so that's what I'm explaining to these people. And you know what? Within 15 minutes, we're hugging it out. And that's where it is. Because the cannabis world, we're all the same in this industry, right? We all love the plant. We all love the products. It's a kumbaya environment. I want to keep peace in our industry. I don't want to have wars. This is the one industry where I hope, obviously, there's going to be competition and all that kind of stuff. But this is an industry about feeling good about yourself, in my opinion. And that's why I want to keep it. And we're getting along with these licensees. Sure, there'll be maybe some people that will hold grudges for a period of time. But I am 100% sure that Curaleaf is going to have better than 70% penetration in the adult use market under the social equity licenses within the next 6 months. That's where we're going to be.
I honestly think that big cannabis is actually probably the best for new markets, especially because it brings a sense of stability, right? Like you see, like, in my opinion, you see a lot of markets where like big cannabis wasn't allowed and a lot of people come in and they pour their whole life savings, if you will, into like starting a company. And next thing you know, they run into a bad harvest or something like this, and they don't have the network or the other resources to kind of help prop up the business and stabilize it, right? And so like that's where I think that big cannabis does provide the stability that is lacking in the industry right now because there is no federal support for it as well, right?
The first thing Curaleaf did when we got our adult use license in December is we saved a hemp farmer. We did a huge order of oil from him. He was literally going bust. And we bought this huge, and they survived because of it. It's the first thing we did. So, we helped the market develop. We want these people to be successful. We're limited to 3 adult use stores. I can't build a huge business on 3 adult use stores. To be honest, my retail business in New York, to me, at the moment, is irrelevant. It's the wholesale business. I need these store owners to buy my products. So I need to create good terms for them. Good products for them. I need to build relationships for them. I need to help the local farmers that are working in that industry. That's what we're there for. And that's where the angry people at the regulators don't understand. They're angry, but they don't do anything. You know, all they did was hurt the industry rather than help it. The slowest, most awful launch we've ever seen. And I'm vocal about it. I don't have any problem telling. But listen, we have settled with them. We're trying to build a better relationship with them, and we're trying to move forward. And I'm hopeful that they want to do the same thing. We'll see. But that's where we are.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. And I think there's misguided frustrations from some of the smaller businesses that have been completely left out to dry by the regulators. And it's up to your team, unfortunately, now to come in and provide those resources of stability and infrastructure, exactly like both of you alluded to allow for this market to not only stabilize, but excel.
Right.
So let's quickly switch gears to a quick rapid fire. True or false, you, Boris Jordan, are the wholesale Curaleaf sales leader in New York.
Yes, true.
5 years from now, rank these markets for impact on Curaleaf: Florida, New York, Germany.
Over the next 12 months, Florida, because we have a huge base there, then Germany, then New York.
Three people to share vape with, dead or alive.
I wish I could share one with my dad. He died, but he never tried it, and I would have loved to have done it. He was my best friend, so that would have been nice. That would have been number one on my list. I'll leave it there for now.
What question do you wish more people asked you?
Probably, why do you care about the industry as much as you do, rather than talking about money and market caps and investors and, you know, revenues and EBITDA and all these curse words? You know, why are you in this industry?
Tell me something which is true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
That Curaleaf is anti-social equity and the Curaleaf is anti-home grow.
Under the radar state or country you think most are missing?
Well, I'd say Europe as a region, misunderstood, and the other players are missing it. And in the United States, I think it's covered in the United States, actually.
True or false, by 2026, Americans will be able to get their insurance to cover the medical cannabis?
No.
What outside company are you drawing inspiration from?
I draw less inspiration from companies than I do from leaders. And, you know, I've read every book about JP Morgan, every book about Rockefeller, everything you could possibly imagine about Steve Jobs, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk. I love entrepreneurs. I love reading about how they built their businesses, what they've done, and what inspires them to do what they do. That's my favorite thing to do. Company comes second, the people come first. And that, by the way, is in everything. In the people that you hire, people are first, companies come second.
What do investors never ask for, but they should?
Again, it depends on the investor. The current investor in the industry is overly focused on cash flow and on conservatism. Great companies were never built by conservative leaders. Great companies were built by risk takers. Those that go for it and they roll it, and that's how they do it. Yes, there's a lot more failures than there are successes, but the good ones, and I've done it six times in my life, built six big businesses, do it on the basis of taking risk and having vision. And the problem is this industry has lost its vision, in my opinion. Everybody is seriously obsessed with quarterly earnings, cash flow, free cash flow, operating cash flow, and not about building brands, growing, getting the word out there, investing. That's the problem in the cannabis industry right now.
What aspect of your business keeps you up at night?
Every aspect of my business at the moment keeps me up at night.
If you could put anything on a billboard, metaphorically speaking, to get a message out there to billions of people, it could be an image, a quote, or a word, what would it be?
Peace and love.
We're sitting here 1 year from now. What does Curaleaf look like?
I think Curaleaf probably is a company that returns to mid-double-digit growth, much healthier balance sheet after our restructuring, and hopefully a happy team. That's what I really care about. It's tough going through restructuring. It's most difficult, not on the investor, but on the people that work in the company. And we're through it now, and now it's time to rebuild the culture and make our people happy with what they're doing and where they're working.
Prediction time. Boris, with the narrative that big pharma, tobacco, and alcohol industries are gearing up to eventually dominate the cannabis sector, with your leadership at Curaleaf, how do you perceive the evolution of the industry, and how do you see unique opportunities for Curaleaf to either collaborate or fend them off going forward?
Bring it on, guys. We're building Curaleaf not to sell. We're building Curaleaf to compete. So bring it on.
Kellen, you want to take a swing?
I mean, I don't think that pharma has the same set of skills. And if you look at both pharma and like Curaleaf, they both had to start from scratch. And pharma now is a decade behind Curaleaf in terms of their experience. So I'm going to bet on Boris. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think hearing what Boris said about the learning curve that went in originally and then the evolution of those skill sets, I think you just can't simulate. No matter the resources you have, no matter the reach you have, I think you need to understand the detailed nuances that he laid out today that make cannabis unique and maybe similar in some industries, but have this unique differences that allow for the certain operators to still have that advantage from an experience set that I don't think can be understated. So Boris, for our listeners, they want to get in touch, they want to learn more about Curaleaf and they want to buy Curaleaf, where can they find you?
They can find us through our IR department, Camille Lyon, who used to be at BTIG, was the analyst at BTIG. We hired him about a year and a half ago. Terrific person, very in-depth knowledge of the industry. Always happy to answer any questions. Reach out through our website, through our IR pages. And frankly, reach out to me. I'm always available on Twitter. You won't believe how many questions Tracy's going to kill me for this too. I answer in the DM section of my Twitter account. To small $1,000 investors who invest $100 or $1,000 in our business, they'll reach out for me for Twitter, ask me a question. I always answer. I always believe you got to work with everybody, no matter how small they are, or no matter how big they are. If they're an investor of yours, they've risked their capital to invest in your company. You have to keep talking to them. You got to educate them. You got to make sure they're happy with the investment.
Love it. Appreciate taking the time. This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, my name's Kate, and I'm your host of the Pot Moms podcast. I started the Pot Moms podcast, because I wanted to end the stigma against using cannabis, specifically with moms, but also anyone who chooses to consume. I strive for a balance of humor and education, along with some pretty rad guests, to help combat social biases that come with consuming cannabis. Kids are hard. Join me for regular podcast episodes packed with parenting hacks, real-life stories, and of course, my favorite cannabis products. The days are long, but the years are short. So roll another J and take a deep breath. Keep blazing and stay amazing.